Now, it might sound like a cliche, but joining me on the virtual couch today is a woman whose story is absolute living testimony to the power of determination and of never giving up on your dreams. Her name is Elizabeth Nyamayaro. She is a Zimbabwean-born humanitarian and former senior advisor at the United Nations who founded the influential He for She initiative. And watching her campaign being launched at the United Nations General Assembly a few years ago was more than just the culmination of years of hard work. It was also the fulfillment of a childhood dream, and it's a dream that was born out of absolute abject poverty. Elizabeth has recently told her story in a memoir called I Am a Girl from Africa, which is available in this country via Jonathan Ball Publishers, and it's my great, great pleasure to have her on the line with us to share a little bit of that story with us. Elizabeth, I couldn't put your book down this past weekend. Thank you so much for joining us to share the story with the rest of the audience as well. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, and I'm so delighted that you enjoyed the book.
There's so much to this book. We won't have time to talk about all of it. I have to say that it's partly a tribute to the amazing family who raised you, and particularly your beloved Gogo. It's also partly a testimony to you and the power of believing in your dreams. Because Elizabeth, at the point we meet you at the start of this book, dreams are very far away. Even at the thought of a future, it all is very far away, because you are 8 years old, lying on the ground on the absolute verge of death from starvation. And what happened next was just an absolutely pivotal moment in your life. Won't you briefly share with our audience what that was?
Well, it was a remarkable moment. But prior to that, I grew up in a small village in Zimbabwe. And I had a beautiful childhood because we literally grew up with the spirit of Ubuntu. So we grew our food together. We shared everything with each other. But then when I turned 8 years old, a severe drought hit our village. And as you said, it left us with nothing to eat or drink. And one day I was so weak from hunger that I actually thought I was going to die. But then this incredible thing happened. And humanitarian, who was a fellow African with the United Nations, found me. She gave me a bowl of porridge and literally saved my life. And this was the moment that sparked my dream. I remember thinking, well, I too just want to be like her so that maybe one day I can save the lives of others in a similar way that my life had been saved. And thankfully, that dream came true.
And how it came true is an absolutely remarkable story. Elizabeth, that concept of the angel in blue who helped you that day and the moment where you decided that one day you wanted to be that person for somebody else. It's one thing to conceptualize that and have the dream. It's quite another to get there when, as you say, you are living in a small rural village in Zimbabwe, a very, very long way away from United Nations headquarters. tough circumstances growing up, a large extended family who really pulled together to help one another, to help ensure that you received an education, at least to finish your high schooling. Even then, though, the dream of a university education, the hope of a job at the UN seemed very, very far out of reach. How did you eventually manage to get to London to start pursuing that dream in earnest?
I mean, it took more than just my own immediate family. It took my entire African community in Zimbabwe. In every single place where I ended up living, you know, after the age of 10, when I left my gogo in the village because a second drought had struck our village, I have been really, really blessed, and everybody sort of chipped in. Eventually, in my 20s, I decided that I was going to move to London to pursue this dream against all odds. And I remember literally landing at Heathrow Airport one morning with £250 to my name, no friends or family in the United Kingdom, just determined to make this dream come true. But of course, everything, like with most big dreams, everything that could have gone wrong literally went wrong. At some point, I ran out of money. I was almost homeless. And I decided, though, that I was going to stick it through until my dream eventually came true.
And then the moment where my heart just sank for you, Elizabeth, because you find the courage to knock on the door of what you think is the United Nations office in London, only to discover that it's not. It's an associated agency, but the UN doesn't even have a presence in London. You're in the wrong country entirely. A lot of people would have just given up at that point. You did not, though. How much longer was it before you finally got a foot in the door at the UN?
Well, it took 3 years. I mean, it is one of those crazy stories of sheer determination, because I was, first of all, just arriving in London. I had a complete fish out of the water moment, right? Because everything looked and felt different. and the culture was very different to me. But then I just held on to this belief that I was there because I had this greater purpose, because I also knew, just growing up in my village, how my gogo explained to me what it means to be an African. And she had taught me that being an African means you dare to dream a dream for others, right? That my dream was also going to help uplift my own community. So I knew that this was such a big thing that I couldn't give up on. I knock on this door that I think is the United Nations, and of course it's not. And I decided that I was going to do anything it takes. I ended up working all sorts of jobs. I was a janitor in this youth hostel that I was staying. And I'm glad that I stayed. It paid off 3 years later. The UN opened an office in London, literally came to me, as it were, and my dream came true.
And
I became the girl in the blue uniform, which was everything, by the way.
That is amazing. And you got to wear that blue uniform and bring it back to Africa. Elizabeth, there are fascinating chapters in this book talking about the campaigns you worked on around malaria, around the alleviation of river blindness, around malnutrition. It must have been intensely satisfying for you to be back on the African continent and giving back as you dreamed of doing. Particularly interesting to read is how you felt the concept of Ubuntu could be used as really a central concept to all of these interventions you were making.
Indeed. In fact, I think that it was actually quite emotional, and it is still very emotional, because I knew that doing this, I really wanted to find a way that I could uplift my African continent in a significant way, because Africa made me who I am. Of all the things that I'm most proud of, being a child of the African soil is one of the greatest things that I just feel such a, you know, such a strong emotional connection to. So the ability to then be able to show up and be back on the African continent and work with communities who, I must say, though, they get all the credit. You know, it's remarkable how when you're sitting in London, and this was one of the most jarring things for me, seeing the misrepresentation of our African continent and our people in mainstream media in the West, how we're portrayed as helpless, as waiting to be saved. And yet the reality, you know, going into communities, I found that we are protagonists of our own stories. African communities are uplifting themselves out of poverty, out of hardship. And we do this because of our Ubuntu spirit. And so that was really remarkable for me. And I think it made the work so much easier, because ultimately it's the recognition that we are all connected. And therefore, if we are all connected, it's up to all of us individually to uplift each other in our communities.
I'm speaking to Elizabeth Niamayaro, who is talking to us from California today. She's the author of I Am a Girl from Africa, a memoir detailing her amazing journey from her childhood in a small village in Zimbabwe to working in the highest offices of the United Nations. Now, along the way, you got to meet one of your personal idols, our own Phumzile Nhlamo Nuka, and she, of course, brought you in to work at UN Women, Elizabeth, where your focus shifted onto matters of gender equality, which, of course, would have been so much a part of the work you were already doing in Africa, but became your primary focus. And I think a lot of our listeners will remember the launch of the He for She campaign. They'll remember Emma Watson standing up in her power suit, delivering that incredibly moving speech that she gave that day. I wasn't aware of the fact that it was, in fact, the brainchild of somebody from our neighbouring country, Zimbabwe, or of the challenges you faced, not just in launching it, but in continuing it. Elizabeth, I believe at the time, and I understand from reading your book, that there was actually quite a bit of pushback against that concept. The campaign was designed to say, we must include men in the conversation around gender equality. We need them on board as allies fighting in our corner, not as antagonists on this journey. I believe from what you wrote in the book that you had quite a bit of pushback, particularly from feminist quarters to that concept.
Yes, I mean, there were some feminists who felt very strongly about not engaging men because they saw them as the oppressor, right? And I fully understood this, but again, serving under Phumzile has been one of the greatest honors of my life. And this movement, yes, you know, it really became a co-creation of Phumzile's visionary leadership, where she also understood, right, that at the end of the day, we often look at gender inequality as an issue for women and to be led by women. And we put all the responsibility on women to figure out how to not get raped, to figure out how to not get murdered, instead of actually shifting the focus and saying to the men, They are the ones we have to stop doing this, right? And making them accountable for creating a gender equal world. But yes, the pushback was simply the fact that men are the oppressors. But we knew, again, because of our Ubuntu, that you actually have to engage the oppressor, the perceived oppressor, in order for them to take the responsibility of ending some of these grave inequalities that still happen to women and girls around the world.
I know initially, even within the UN structures, Elizabeth, there was concern that it was all too sort of airy-fairy and conceptual, that the campaign wasn't going to deliver measurable, concrete results. You've certainly had the last laugh on the critics who felt that way, because the final chapters of your book talk to some of the results that have sprung from that campaign. For example, Iceland passing legislation making it illegal to pay women less than men for doing the same work. And then the one which really strikes very hard, the story of what has happened in Malawi with the president getting behind the commitment to end child marriage there. Won't you just briefly explain to our audience what has been achieved in the years since you launched this campaign?
I mean, it's been absolutely remarkable. It would be wrong for me, though, to take all credit, because what has happened in these two countries and many more is the testament of communities coming together and doing the work for themselves. Malawi, as you said, is very personal to both you and I because, you know, we are from the African continent. And I remember at the time when we were engaging with the government of Malawi, our country office of UN Women in Malawi did all the work on the ground to try and engage them to end child marriage. And people thought it was quite ambitious because, you know, how could this ever happen? It's part of our culture. But we knew that, you know, every girl deserves the right, to pursue her dreams and not get married off as a child. But what actually ended up happening was the community themselves jumped in and said, we are going to lobby our government to actually outlaw child marriage. And within 15 months of joining the He For She movement, the government made that their commitment and child marriage was outlawed in Malawi. But the bigger, I think, moment for all of us was what happened later, right? Because we saw communities not just stop at the legislation force, but they actually went around their communities annulling more than 20,000 child marriages and sending those girls back to school. They did that for themselves as part of their Ubuntu, and that's really incredible.
That's an amazing part of the story. Elizabeth, I can't not mention, just in closing, what you discovered when you came here to South Africa and stepped into a He For She tavern in Klerksdorp. I'd never heard of the concept before, and I was amazed to read that there are over 100 of them in Klerksdorp alone. Tell our listeners what you found there.
Yes, it's a remarkable story. So we have another amazing office of UN Women in South Africa who led us to this incredible initiative that is started in South Africa, again, which is very much needed. Several years ago, a young girl had been raped and then murdered, and her body was burned. Very horrific incident that happened. And all of a sudden, these men, self-proclaimed He For She men, sort of emerged and started protesting, looking to seek justice for the family of the young girl. And it turns out they were part of this initiative that they had founded at the local level, which is called the He For She Taverns, whereby they were actually engaging men in taverns to make sure that they were being part of ending domestic abuse and rape at the community level. And now, as you say, there's more than 4,000 men that are part of this. I know that the Catholic Mission Church has been part of supporting their work. So it's really a remarkable thing, again, of what communities are capable of doing, because on one hand, you have taverns and beer and alcohol, and then you have a religious group supporting that work, of course, with the guidance of UN Women Office in South Africa. So it's just really heartwarming that we are doing something. The stories have to be told, which is also why I wanted to write this book.
And I want to thank you for sharing so many uplifting and encouraging stories in this book, including your own. Elizabeth, I mean, your gogo, wherever she is today, must be so proud of what you have achieved. And I'm sure you must feel pride in it yourself as well.
Thank you very much. I am indeed. But as I said to you, I think my greatest pride is just knowing that I do come from a wonderful continent and I am truly the embodiment of Ubuntu, because I am, because we are. My story is the story of so many great people on the African continent who have sacrificed for me to be here today, and I'm just really grateful.
Elizabeth Niamayaro, thank you so much for speaking to us today. We're really grateful to have this book to share with each other. It is a wonderful read. The book is called I Am a Girl from Africa. It is Elizabeth's memoir of the remarkable journey. She's given you just a snippet of it in that interview today, but I urge you to pick up a copy and read it for yourself. It is available in South Africa via Jonathan Ball Publishers, available in all good bookstores now at around about 295 rand a copy.